You're going to get Cremasto Fest today and hear a lot of the same things, see a lot of the same thing, but maybe a little bit different take on all this. Invoking phonetics in the title of this talk was mostly as somewhat of a joke to raise the blood pressure of some of the Cladist inquisitors, and which it did. Where's Andrew? Anyway, but also it applies to much of the past basis for groupings within the tribe and for the tribe itself as a grouping. Boy, I can't wear these and hit a button at the same time. Okay, there we go. Let's see. Eventually I'll go to trifocals and none of this will be a problem. This is especially true if we look at the term loosely, we apply it loosely on the level of morphological characters rather than the organism as a whole. And that's obviously not a traditional usage, but squint a little bit and bear with me. After all, morphological character-based analysis relies on the analyst's appraisal of the overall similarities of characteristics of characters, and then that appraisal is used to infer phylogenetic relationships. Whoops. There we go. Cremasticylini is rather loosely based on cetoneines having dentate maxillae and mandibles, which are fitted for piercing and tearing, as opposed to mouth parts that are reduced to brush-like mandibles, maxillae, and fitted for feeding on flowers or plant exudates. Adults of Cremasticylini with known habits are mostly predators and other insects, mostly or entirely, and that's an unusual food habit within the Scarabeoidea. Other characters include generally tend to be not too exciting looking in terms of color. We have black or reddish, although here's an exception. They have usually dorsal ventrally flattened. They tend to have expanded minta and scapes, and they tend to be fairly rare in collections, and also tend to have metamesosternal apophysis lacking, which is a plesiomorphy. My own work deals with alpha level review of the North American species of the group. But as a result of that, some character states pop up that put them somewhat at odds with the traditional views of the grouping and the current very rudimentary state of the art for Cremasticylini phylogeny, which is very rapidly increasing with Glenay's work. Type genus, Cremasticylus, by my count, and I'm going to be doing quite a bit of synonymization of some of the past subspecies and species, is roughly 35 species ranging from Canada to central Mexico. Obviously, they're very derived in appearance to the standard Cremasticylines, although as you can see from this one, an old world species, it's a fairly standard. Cremasticylus itself possesses trichomes and associated gland cells in the pronotal angles, and in some cases elsewhere. If you take the broad Cremasticylene definition, current use, a tribe contains, as this example shows, many groups whose sole purported synapomorphy is dentate maxillae and mandibles, regardless of the style of dentition, regardless of other characters. And in many cases, I think this is very probably results from a parallelism for carnivory. Even in some of the more derived old world taxa, such as Cenachylus, which are the standard dark colored ink ones, the mouthpart apomorphies are of a different style, although they're presumably analogous to those of Cremasticylus. The many of those characters I already mentioned are very probably parallelisms, and a perfect example of this is if we take a look at the Filiarines, which are, in my mind, the dynastine equivalent of the Chromaticalinae. Filiarines, the few that have known habits, feed on other insects and are predatory, as Jim Hunter can attest when he had some cannibalize each other. Here's a shot of Nemetophilurus personatus, and sure enough, you have, as with many filiarines, they're flattened, drab-colored, black, or to Pisces. They tend to be rare to uncommon in nature. They have expanded menta. They have the dentate maxillary mandibles, and in this case, you even have trichomes, which, let's see, there's a nifty trichome next to Clypea pleuron here in the mouth parts, and in the anterior tibia, there's even a trichome. So if you look at all this taken together and put this on a dynastine equivalent, this is a Chromaticalis from a different lineage, all based on synapomorphies, or all based on parallelisms, excuse me. Okay, now for a quick tour of the North American Chromaticalinae, which do appear to be monophyletic. They're all Chromaticalina before these add-ons from the Old World. Nearly all are in the New World. There's a couple Old World elements that are very similar, primarily to Genucanus, which you'll see in a second. And all with known life histories have a very short pre-adult cycle of anywhere from a month to 3 months. Adults are available nearly all year long, although rarely seen because they tend to be underground most of that time or within plant masses, etc., and they tend to be hard to find in the field, though you never know. Any warm day of the year, you may see an adult Chromaticalis on the surface, and they're available if you want to work hard enough. One of the synapomorphies for the Chromaticalina are the very expanded mentum and the Clypea pleuron. This is what Cricken termed as a Clypea pleuron, which is this flattened underside of the Clypeus, and everywhere from Chromaticalis on over. With Chromaticalis, within Chromaticalis, it varies somewhat as to the shape, etc. A couple of the larger genera are, in terms of size, not in terms of species, both of these are fairly small genera. Paracycliteus is known from three specimens, one described species. There may be three or four specimens. There may be a second species that is this one from Panama. Cycliteus is currently known from six species, although from what I can tell, there may be only one with a southern subspecies because there's some allometry in the head horn. Otherwise, they're very similar, and you can see the Cycliteus is a pretty nifty critter with very large anterior legs, the protibia with that large hook. Some have a head horn that's maybe double that length and bifurcate at the end. Another large species is Lissomalus flori that occurs from Arizona down to central Mexico. It is a monotypic genus, again, uncommon in collections. The one on the left, Selecnemus leucosticta, is found in the eastern U.S., is known from just a handful of specimens from Maryland down to South Carolina, and then single specimen that I think Paul Legault picked up on the wing in Mississippi, and a couple specimens from Wisconsin. So there's a distribution for you. And if any of you see any of these, I'll take all you can pick up. It's a very enigmatic insect. Lissomalus flori has been picked up a couple times in series now, and in fact, about a month ago, some people picked it up on Kitt Peak in Arizona, southern Arizona, several specimens, and apparently emergence from the their new adult emergence. Janucanus has roughly 10 species from Arizona down to Brazil. They're a little bit unusual for the New World fauna, as if you look at paramirs, male paramirs for Chromaticotyledons in general, they are not very informative. They're kind of the basic plesiomorphic cetonian structure. There's slight differences at the level of species group within Chromaticotyledus. The vast majority of them are fairly boring. Janucanus has fairly different male genitalia. Externally, they're very similar to an old world genus that has the boring style genitalia, but in visually. There's a number of these are not inquilins as far as is known. A number of the species are found to breed in plants that have a basal rosette of imbricate leaves. The one in the U.S., Ineptus, is found in sotol plants, as is another in Mexico. And then others are found in bromeliads or orchids further south. Janucanus muso on the left has been reared from a bird nest in Panama. This is a critter that probably none of the people that even work on these in the audience have seen before. It's Centrochilus howdeni. There's three known specimens. It's the closest known relative to Chromaticotyledus. It does have trichomes under the posterior pronotal angles, but not the anterior pronotal angles. It has a more plesiomorphic looking pronotum without the differentiation of the pronotal angles as in Chromaticotyledus. It's found in central Mexico. Okay, with Chromaticotyledus, it does appear to be an easily circumscribed group. Has some nice anapomorphies to tie them together. Obviously, the pronotal angle trichomes, also within the New World fauna, capuliform mentum, a concave mentum. Most of the others are fairly flat. I'm going to recognize at this point four subgenera, and you'll see why in a little bit. Three are pretty distinctive, as you've already seen. One, Myrmecotonus, as mentioned previously, and by Glenay, it sounds like we're of like minds there. And again, all with known biologies are myrmecophiles. And again, Macropodina, as you've already seen, and we both chose the species that has the most ornate anterior tarsi, and that's Chromaticotyledus beameri there. Some of the others have a little bit less swollen segments, but nearly all the species can be told by the shape of the fourth and fifth anterior tarsal segment. And there's pretty wide variation. And again, within this group, I would put them basically within the Chromaticotyledus. All of them lack the carina or the notch or cleft in the anterior proepisternal carina that Glenay showed. And again, they have that supraocular carina with a cusp behind. There are some gland cells in that area as well. And clypeus medially carinate. And the mentum is mucronate posteriorly. And here's a few species. The one on the left is an undescribed species known from two specimens from central Arizona. Planatus is known from southwestern Arizona and presumably northwestern Mexico. Depressus is currently in synonymy with Planatus, but it's a separate species that occurs mostly in California. There's host ants known for four of the six or seven species, and most of them are in with Camponotus ants, including, by the way, the one that breeds with in bannertail kangaroo rat or other kangaroo rat mounds or neotoma nests. There's one record of an adult being taken from Camponotus desertus nests. So apparently they breed in that situation, but the adults are still feeding on nests or on ants elsewhere, at least from that one datum. There's one species that's a very, very apomorphic, very smooth, unusual looking species that's been found once and with Myrmecocystis, honey ants. Okay, the Myrmecotonus mess, which depending on the analysis, may actually turn out to be monophyletic. But in this case, there's a cleft in the anterior proepisternal margin again, we saw earlier. Then there's the Chaumiai group, as I call it, which lacks that cleft. The mentum is not notched posteriorly. There's no frontal gland, and I'll explain that in a second. And the anterior pronotal angle is not laterally constricted, and same with the posterior angle, it's not completely constricted. There's four fairly well-defined species groups via general morphology as well as by a number of characters, and they form more or less two clades from what I can see. One of them fairly strongly supported, the other one's a little bit iffy. Here's Chaumiai. Here's a species that's currently in synonymy. It should not be. It's known from three specimens from around Tucson, Arizona. Very bizarre critter that basically looks like a Chaumiai with the posterior angles are obsolescent. The anterior tibia, I don't have a picture here, but they're nearly quadrate. This little earth mover. Really strange thing, and if any of you can find these probably in early spring down by Tucson, you can bring me all you have as well. There's Chaumiai again. These two have the no notch in the anterior proepisternal margin. That would be right beneath the anterior angle. The other group is typified by Armatus complex as well as one other or two other species. And note on this, what I'm calling a subspecies, Armatus montanus, the size of the posterior angles relative to the interangular distance. And also the tibiae tend to be more or less rounded or half rounded, because we're going to get back to that in a second. The other two species group would be the Robinsoni group. Robinsoni itself is known from two specimens. This is Tomentosus, one I described a couple decades ago, that looks fairly similar to Robinsoni in general form. Then the other would be the Mexicanus group, and there's three species there with a few subspecies, some named, some not, that are morphologically distinct. And these are grouped by this flattened, dorsally flattened mesopimeron, as Glenay mentioned. As far as is known, these are Formica or Lasius. Used for Formica as a host ants. Okay, on to Chromastochyla sensu stricto. Again, they have the anteriorly broad notch and anterior cleft proepisternal carina, similar to Myrmecotonus, although of a different form. But they have a whole suite of characters that set them aside from the other groups. Many of these having to do with their internal characters, evidenced a little bit externally. And Gary Alpert, thank God he decided to become a histologist and started serial sectioning Chromastochylus and saw what the glands were doing. And these some of these species are batteries of glands. They're amazing, the content of gland cells. In a few of the species, nearly a third or more of the pronotum is filled with gland cells. And you see some fairly ornate trichomes in this one species group, and Glenay, I'm glad to see this one popped out right along Harrisi along with Knighton's, and they both have this little secondary trichome right there that I've always wondered about. Most of the species except two have this notch which fits around the prosternal apophysis and braces it when the head's deflexed, and I think that's a strengthening issue. They also have what's termed, Gary Alpert termed, a frontal gland, which you can see by the swollen clipeofrontal transition. The frontal gland is a big wad of cells right in there, and some species, 200-300 gland cells. Those empty out into a space in the clipeolabral junction, and it's usually tomentum filled. This one's a little bit dirty. I'll show you a better picture later. And also some of those in this area go into this little notch, little cavity right at the above the antennal insertions, and in many species have some tomentum that serves as the wick there. Some of the species, here's one without the, okay. One of the species with without the notch in the posterior margin of the mentum, Knighton's, and a couple others. Again, there's that secondary trichome in that group. Trinodia, again, trilobed pronotum, muscular attachment sites for the lobes, and it has this dorsally prolonged lower part of the anterior proepisternal margin. And some variation there. On the right-hand side, side view of a fresh constrictus colus. Some of the past species for Mastocylus have been based on cetacean. Unfortunately, when they come out of the pupa, they may look like that, and give it a month and all that's gone. But those hairs extend nearly a third the body length in this species. Okay, and if you'll bear with me, I want to go through this a little bit because there are some interesting parallelisms, and phonetics has unfortunately played a little bit of role in this in the past. We talked before about Wheeleri. It isn't related to Trinodia. Those aren't muscular attachment sites. This is a large wad of gland cells. The anterior proepisternal cleft opens anteriorly, as in Chromastocylus and Myrmecotonus, but it also has the notch at posterior momentum. It also has a frontal gland. Here's the tomentose filled area I was talking about before. It doesn't show up very well here. It has the little frontal gland there. A number of characters that place it smack dab in the middle of Chromastocylus sensu stricto. All the important things go there. The gross morphology throws it way off. It doesn't look like any of the rest of them, but the characters show it's a Chromastocylus sensu stricto. Then one might ask, well, why the weird morphology? And there's evidence for this in a parallelism. And that parallelism happens to be with, if you remember, I asked you to look at the small anterior angles on Armatus montanus. Well, here's Armatus armatus. Armatus armatus is found wherever Formica obscurpes coincides with the Chromastocylus armatus range. And where it does, Formica obscurpes is its primary host ant. Formica obscurpes also happens to be the primary host ant for Wheeleri. Wheeleri has flattened posterior and meso and meta tibia. So does Armatus armatus, unlike the other subspecies. Wheeleri has large angles. So does Armatus armatus. And unfortunately, these kind of things go throughout the groups where there's many parallelisms that are the ants playing on the morphology that may throw one off if one's starting to look at characters of pronotal angle large, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's about it. And Glenay is going to fix that big question mark, but that's the seat of the pants method from someone who's not going to do any cladistics. And thank you, Paul and FSCA, and also Steve Valley, for taking a couple of shots. Any questions?